Hello and welcome back to Marketing Insights by Drew and Rose. I'm Charlotte Johnson, CEO of the agency, and today I'm joined by Louise Robertson, the Global Marketing Director from Patton Insurance. In this episode, we're going to be covering the kind of highs and lows of regulated marketing, but marketing in a combination of B2B and B2C, the changes that's happened over being a marketing director 5-10 years ago versus today, and all of the things that Louise has really had to use in her toolkit to change from having huge in-house marketing teams now to having very small ones with lots of different tech resources. And are you still finding that you're getting the same amount of engagement and therefore marketing qualified leads coming from anchor content, even as our technology changes?
I think we used to rely on one piece. So I started my life in pharmaceutical marketing and we did direct mail. We'd have responses that used to come in not by email, but by postcard. And then it turned into email. But now you cannot rely on one piece of anchor content bringing in leads. The most successful are the research pieces. They do actually, from promoting it with a partner and having a landing page and doing an email campaign, you can generate leads. But a single standalone blog is, you know, if you get a lead, you're very lucky. It's about looking at the holistic personas you're going after. How are you going to touch them? How are you going to remind them you exist? What value are you going to give them? It's not about just saying who you are and what you do all the time. It's about adding value to their life, making their life easier and giving them information that they haven't had. So we're a tech leader in embedded insurance. So we do an awful lot of content on our tech leadership around the connected trip, which is the way the travel market talks about us going on holiday. Nice. So we definitely use tech leadership and insights to build the content. But it is actually, when you're drawing a mind map, your content is a content map rather than expecting one piece to deliver leads.
Nice. You talked about building brand trust. So how have you achieved that over the last couple of years at Patton?
I think we've done it because we've got brilliant customers. We work with really good insurers like Tokio Marine. So the trust is because it's a partnership. So we've got AXA, we've got Tokio Marine, we've got Spinnaker. These are household names anyway. But we work with them to deliver to the distributor and the end customer a personalised experience. No administration, very low touch, using the data with AI so that the forms are populated. So it's all, I won't say it's almost paper free. With Ensley Insurance, the student stuff, it's all within an app, all the documents, everything. So I think we're building trust because it's a partnership thing and the volumes and the customers we have is proof in the pudding, really. So
what are the top three channels that you're currently using that are providing you success?
So if you think of the anchor content, how do you bring the anchor content to life? Well, you talk about it. So we have events. We are keynote speakers in both insurance markets and travel markets. So we talk about connected travel. We talk about the embedded. We've been very successful in a campaign about the 2030 traveller. What will the travel look like in 2030? Mm. So we're moving with the market. So you have your piece of content, then you take it to an event and you talk about it, then you do a podcast about it, and then you do an email campaign. We do use email, but we steer clear of workflows because they drive people insane. The emails that come into your thing and say, did you read this? Oh, you're going to miss out. Those really have, particularly in the fintech space, people don't trust you if you're going to say you can revolutionize their buyer channel by embedding insurance. So we don't do automated workflows. We do very specific account-based marketing to segments. So we build the content to deliver something to the person that receives it that we do believe has value to them.
So following on from that, where we've got the three main channels that you said that you speak about, tell us a little bit about why you're using those and how that also might help other marketers in their decisions around what channels they should be using.
I think when somebody signs a deal or in an ecosystem as a marketing director or a marketing manager, you've suddenly got another marketing person that you can engage with. Mm. So partnerships are all about finding that marketing content within either your customer or your supplier or your sales team, because then you've got double the power. So if you think, if I go out as Patton, but Patton and Amadeus is a bigger statement, it goes to a wider audience, it takes joint brand out there, and it's much stronger. And you pick up new customers, because just by putting the two brands together, you have a recommendation for what you're doing.
And have you had experiences where partnership and affiliation hasn't worked? And have you got any experience shares on, in your experience, you've made it work? Because not all partnerships and affiliates work. I think we've all had experience of it. So I think,
not in this job, but I was in a global marketing at LexisNexis. And yes, we used to partner with publications, legal publications. And sometimes the partnership is too slow or is non-dynamic. So LexisNexis is even more regulated than InsurTech. So you can feel the partnership, whether that there has to be an energy between the two partners that want to do this. So don't force a partnership. At the very least, get a quote from the partner that you can use on your website. So go for the smallest, you know, thing that you want, the quote saying you're wonderful, and then explore where you can go. But don't waste your time if that exploration says no. I've wasted lots of time in corporate structures waiting for a press release to go up and down, and then find they release something without our brand in it. So some people want to be partners and some people don't.
I suppose it's looking at those red flags from the offset. And if it's one of those where you're desperately going after them because you want the name, it's probably that's just the start of how the relationship is going to continue.
Yeah, and I think that's what you've just said is really important. You have to, as a marketer, be much more creative than just wanting their logo and their name. You have to read a little bit as to where they are in their journey and actually do a proper thought leadership piece to talk to them about, not just say, we want a quote from your boss, we've written this and this is the logo. You've got to be much more creative than that, because if you think how many people are asking to use their logo. So I tend to go in with this is really exciting. We've got this amount of bookings, have had the insurance. We're so proud of this. We'd like to work with you and talk about it. And it's different from going in and saying, can your boss say you implemented in 10 days and you were fantastic and it was cost effective and put his name to it? They're going to say no. So I think you have to be creative, and you have to be literally turn the tables on and think, what would I want someone to ask me? What is a valid partnership? What's a valid partnership message?
I think with those, that the most successful ones where you're pitching in, here are the solutions of why it works on both sides. But you know, if you're at the day one arguing over, oh, this logo is going to be 3 millimeters larger than the other,
don't
logo,
start there. Just don't even start there. Start with the value.
Just say next.
It's almost like creating your own a joint value proposition for you and that brand that works. And once you've got it, you can reuse it, and you can put it on pictures and things. So that's most important.
It's agreed. On a year-long strategy, how many different sort of partners and affiliates are you working with at any one time?
We have some that are completely with us on the hot. So we've got some, we've established relationship with some of the bigger players. So it's an ongoing partnership. So the marketing plan is every 3 months. We're agile. So whilst we have an annual plan, which says the events we're going to go to, the sort of subject matter we're going to go through, previously everything was 2 year plan, 3 year plan. We're very agile. It's a 3 month review, replace, and put out there. So we are a startup. So agile marketing is what we do.
Yeah. And it's interesting, isn't it? We spoke about this before, this amazing line that you said that, you know, you've gone from a waterfall marketing director to an agile marketing director, and that having to spend most of your time on people management in teams of like 90 down to being a 1-2 person team, and everything is this agile responses. And it's such an incredibly different way of working. How are you finding that personally, and how well do you think that's actually working for business in general?
I think there's a good mix at the moment. I think work-life balance has never been better, you know, for people in marketing and for people generally. But agile marketing enables you to change. And I still think that they say fail and fix. I still think that's rubbish. If something doesn't work, everyone still gets grim and moans about it. So, but there is a certain amount of, if you had a waterfall marketing plan that was a year, you could be failing for 6 months and still be on that trajectory of failure. Whereas now you can say, hey, that did not work. So we went after summer camps as a market. It really didn't work. Yeah. Wrong market for us. We tried it for 6 weeks. We saw really good open rates on our emails. We saw articles, but we didn't see any conversions or leads. And when we then did a focus group, we realized they didn't need what we were selling. Nice. So we could stop that and move to a market that needed us. And that's the beauty of agile.
Yeah, it's amazing. I think with Agile, you're learning so much so fast. How do you, as a brand, document and learn all of the learnings to make sure it's passed on to not only future generations, future teams, people that can take over, so that we're, as brands, not then wasting and repeating the tests?
So we have what we call, every month I update our total slide deck, which is like a library of slides. So you know, it's like you do this pitch, that pitch, and sure a pitch. So you end up with all these slides. So I keep them all. When someone goes off piece and does their own, I tidy them up now. I've given up fighting and saying you've got to use this, because we're all people. But I'll improve what they were doing, talk to them about it. And if they're illegal, immoral, or just absolutely suck, they'll go. But I redesign them so that we have, I think it's 85 slides in this deck. We take out the ones that are no longer relevant. We put in the new ones. Takes half an hour with the sales team,
yeah,
and then they know where they are, they've got them. Because I don't know about any other marketers, but my bane of my life is, I've got a presentation tomorrow and I don't know where the slides are. So we always have an introduction deck that sits there, and we have the library that sits there. So making the tools available is really important. So yeah, agile. So when you're saying about passing on knowledge is good, but what you don't want is, the attention span of most people isn't that great these days. So the slides is great. We also have our key facts document, which the team all contribute to, and we edit. And that's for anyone new that starts, but also for us, to remind us who we are. So it's got the messaging, it's got what we've said. If we've done if there's a new quote out there from a customer, we'll be in there. It's a live document.
Okay.
And we save it once a month, so you could look at back ones, but I wouldn't recommend anyone does that. So we are very agile, and that's the way it works.
No, it's great. It's so rare, actually, to have teams that are constantly looking at it. And it's why, yeah, I bring it up, because it seems to be a constant issue of, oh, new people, or it's not included in the onboarding, or we've got a new agency onboarding, or a new marketing assistant.
I share it with everybody.
Yeah, and then they don't do that. But then something that I think, when we were at an event previously, we attended the Marketing Moments event, and we were talking about the way that you manage stakeholders and internal comms, because I always noted, from being on the in-house side before setting up the agency, actually internal comms and stakeholder management was just as difficult, if not sometimes more difficult, to get everyone aligned in our messaging than it was. And I remember you sharing some things of how you were doing that, a pattern, which I thought would be really useful for our audiences to hear. Yeah.
So every time anyone in the business is onboarded, whether they like it or not, they get an hour with marketing. They get an hour with me, and I take them through the story and the products, and then they get another half hour on LinkedIn. So every person that works for us, there's 28, we're not huge, has been through a LinkedIn a masterclass with me. And we actually share screens, and we go through, and while they're on their screen, they update their LinkedIn. Because otherwise, it's no good giving them a slide deck. They won't do it. You have to be hands-on. I've done it with up to 10 people, and it works really well. And you get input from them. And you bring them on that journey. And we have regular all hands every month as well. We've got one coming up on Thursday. And that really helps too.
And what do you do in the all hands?
Every department talks. So there's a product, marketing, insurance, innovation. So we all do 5 to 6 slides. Talk about what happened last month, what's going to happen this month. Thank people for what they've done to this. We talk about wins in sales, why we won them. And we talk about the ongoing business. Nice. So.
And well, it's a great idea. And when you're doing the LinkedIn masterclass, which I think would be awesome for so many companies, because it's this regular thing, and if this comes up for you guys, but it's not just that, oh, it took them 6 months to update their LinkedIn profile, so even just having that done is a win. Yeah. But there's this thing around, what are the rules within the brand that is acceptable to post? Because you actually get people that are like, oh, we're really scared to post. Or if they do, they'll go totally rogue, and you get the management team just looking at the head in hands moment.
So what we tend to do is, we're very active on LinkedIn, and we're active. So we do 4 blogs a month. Blogs are amazing. At the moment, our blogs are outperforming our homepage, because we've just done one on airlines, which is getting a huge amount of traction, because it's written by Paul Frick, who is ex-AXA, knows everything there is about embedded insurance for airlines. So he's written a 2-part series. Because his name's Paul, it is from AXA, because it's about airlines, because delays are really prominent, so we've hit 3 like trends. So that's getting lots of things. So I want our team to share that on LinkedIn. So when you've posted it on LinkedIn, you can put share, but we use Slack. So what I tend to do is say, this is Paul's article, he's our poster boy for the day. These are 3 things you could say when you share it.
Right, nice.
Or add a comment. So I give them, so within my content, so when I'm doing my content plan, we talked about anchor content, there will be blog, meta tags. Then there will be, how's this going to look on LinkedIn on the company page? And then there'll be, how can our team share it? What words can they use?
Right.
And four hashtags. Yeah.
So I think that there is that barrier, isn't there, when you say to teams, hey, this is it, it's really cool, these are the reasons why.
You have to tell them how to do it, yeah.
They'll like it, and no, I need you to comment, and I need you to comment in the first 45 minutes of it going live for it to have that ripple effect. And, you know, you can people have LinkedIn pods or whatnot, but and are great within Slack. But it's really interesting that how even in your in-house teams, they know what to say, but they're so scared of saying it.
They love saying things. And the other thing is, we have, so our tech team in Israel, so we have language differences. Yes. So you have to, our US team are off today because it's the 4th of July. So you have to be aware of what's going on.
Yeah.
But no, always lead them and make it really easy. Don't give them, I think the other thing that old fashioned marketers did, and I was definitely guilty of this, is supplying a slide deck and a piece of paper and expecting them to do something. We have Google Hangout, we have Zoom. Get them on it, get their LinkedIn open, do it with them, and then they get in the habit. And then also I publish our best LinkedIner on the All Hands. I'll say, this month, Paul's article beat Ido's article. That got more views. And our top sharer is Noam Atsum. And I'll say, you know, I'll actually fame them, the ones that do it. Yeah, we don't do any shaming, we do faming.
Nice. It makes such a big difference in teams that where you're trying to encourage,
especially
in ones when you're trying to encourage them to be more online and be, you know, on stage, as we call it, because it is quite daunting.
And it's really important as well. The picture says you don't have to be in a suit, but please don't be at your Christmas party or in your bikini. I talk a lot about pictures, business pictures. It's not a glam shot, it's a friendly shot. There is Photo Feeler is an app that you can put your photos through, and it comes back with how trustworthy you look.
Amazing.
So I use that with everyone.
Do you include that in your LinkedIn?
I do, yeah, and I put my photo through it and show them different photos of me and what it means.
And is that almost become like a brand guideline of how staff can use LinkedIn ongoing?
Yes, it is.
Amazing. I think that's a really awesome takeaway for so many teams that struggle with this.
Yes.
It's a constant issue.
If you think that 90% of your audience are going to be on LinkedIn, it's a very good place to start.
It's such a powerful platform that you can do so much more on. And that leads in nicely into content marketing. So we kind of covered a bit about live events, partners and affiliates. And your third area that you guys really focus on is around content. But I'm fascinated by how complicated your content plan must be if you've got a B2B and B2B2C, and how you have to split that out and educate around it.
It's a very large spreadsheet. I was using Monday, but Monday got it more complicated. So I just literally have two sheets. That sounds awful. And I work with my PR agency, so we're on Google Docs, we share everything. So the content, the PR content and the events that is on these hideously large spreadsheets, but we follow them on spreadsheets. I haven't found any other way, and I have used Monday and I have used Jira, this still works for me, so we do that.
We use a system called Planable, so it's a bit more visual. So you can plan it out by calendar and by channel, and you can see what it's going to look like by channel, and everyone can collaborate and sign
off.
That's good. But yeah, we also did the same. We work in Asana. We tried that.
That's Asana. Asana was
so complicated. Spreadsheets are like just too ugly for me. I just can't cope with
Planable,
it.
Planable, I might have to have a look at that.
Yeah,
then.
It's really good. Yeah, you can do it by calendar view or by feed view. And you can group it so that you can even have it. So for instance, if we're doing a post, you can have it synced or unsynced.
Yeah.
So you would unsync Twitter, and you might unsync the director's accounts because that would be an we tone of voice versus the brand. And you can just collaborate and get on there, which is quite nice. It's visual, but you can also just do it from a planning perspective and lay it all out. So I'd be like, these are my ideas of where I want it
really
to go.
Like,
and then the team will just start jumping in, adding in their ideas and whatnot. And there's a comment. So you can also twist it so you can have your comments internal and external, and you can hide it from your clients. So if you wanted to be like, the stakeholders or board can't sign this off yet, so whether it's internal or agency, you can have it split out and multiple levels of sign-off. So we found it a really good production tool.
Oh, I'm going to have a look at that. Yeah, no, I love new tools, as we know. So.
So how are you currently spitting out your content? You touched on anchor pieces and working about planning those anchor pieces in advance.
Yes.
How much are you doing in that anchor piece of content, planning in advance, versus in the moment reactionary content?
We're doing 75% planning. So I've got two big pieces. One's a guide to A/B testing, which everyone says, oh, everyone does that. But they actually don't in insurance because it's different. So I'm writing
You can't just assume.
No. So with Innovate This, Sarah Watson, a journalist, is working with me to write this piece that is about how do you A/B test insurance and what bits of it can you? Mm. And we've got some client cases in there. And it's going through, there's lots of contributors, but that's close. But I think that's going to be a big up one. And then the next one we're doing is with the Insurance Observatory, which is about the changes in insurance, what embedded insurance used to look like and what it looks like now. So there are two big content pieces, which we're probably going to put out in September because August is, yeah. So they'll be downloadable. They'll be creating a podcast. There'll be a little video. And there'll be, in fact, Joyce is talking at Innovate This. She'll be talking about it on the stage. So what we do is we bring that content to life. Mm. For 3 to 12 weeks, mm-hmm. it's live, and then it sits as a content on the website. So.
How do you currently measure success between those three areas of events, content marketing and affiliate?
We use HubSpot. Mm-hmm. I'm sad to say one of the biggest fans. So most of our form, well, all our forms are attribute lead scores. So I can see the lead scoring. So I can tell you that this lead came in and they were on 3 minutes on this page. They've read this, they've downloaded that. So then I can see what's triggered. Well, you can't really, but you get an idea of what is working and what isn't working. And there is the normal direct downloads, the visitors, but really inbound leads is the biggest measurement.
How do you work? I mean, marketers always have this issue between what is an MQL, what is an SQL, how you closely work with sales and how you kind of bridge that gap. And any kind of learnings you can, you can pass on. So I think our key purpose of this is like, how do we continue to help marketeers, especially yeah. as marketeers are having to work in such isolation?
Yeah.
You know, we have gone from those big marketing teams to one or two people in-house, if you're lucky, with lots of externals that you're, constantly evolving. So I think we're always trying to pass on those key learnings to help others.
So I think one of the biggest things we have, which is brilliant, and I've done it in the last two jobs, is we have a lead generation meeting every Monday. We don't let it be cancelled. And we talk about, everyone has their say, what they're working on, how they're getting leads. Marketing says what they're bringing to the table and talks through. And then we track with sales what's happened to the leads that have come in via LinkedIn or via the website or via an event. And we do that in HubSpot too. But I'd say make sales your best friend. They don't come, so we have everyone has to, it's compulsory, the Monday lead gen meeting, unless you've got a client presentation, compulsory. Everyone comes, the CEO's on it, works amazingly. And then we have two agile catch-ups in the week. So we do Monday, Wednesday, Friday. If the diaries aren't looking good, we'll do a Thursday, Friday. We will make sure, sometimes I get all of the sales team on the call, sometimes I don't. Mm. But yesterday I caught up with just one of our US guys. Mm. But the others apologise. What I don't get is people taking it for granted that they cannot come.
Yeah.
So you set this as a joint marketing and sales, thing. And sometimes a marketing qualified lead might be great until you get into the scoping of the product or the offering, and we haven't got the product or our tech doesn't work. Yeah. So it's still an MQAL. We've done our job as a marketeers, but sadly, because we're SaaS, doesn't quite fit. Yeah. Or we haven't got, the regulations don't fit. So
timings off or any of those things.
Yeah, so we know the funnel, but I would say if you're having monthly meetings, stop it. You need to be attached at the hip to your sales team.
And it's really rare, and I love that about the way you guys are set up, because we often find in some of our clients, it's taken us 2 to 3 years to get to that level of building sales and marketing teams together. How do you think that was worked? Is that just... Is it at the foundations of your culture, or is something you've...
I think it's much easier in a startup. Yeah. Much easier in a startup. But, so in LexisNexis, we had them, and they were about monthly.
Mm.
And they were perfunctory. They were just a function.
Tick box.
And we were very siloed. Yeah. So the leads went over. I was measured on visitors, leads, gend. Then there'd be that massive argument over to what the marketing ones that are actually sales qualified. And they'd be pushing back the ones that they thought were rubbish. Mm. And you knew they hadn't followed up. The great thing about having a good CRM is you can actually see that they've emailed them.
Yeah.
So we use HubSpot. So if your sales team buy into whatever CRM you've got, they should be recording it. And most boards these days expect those figures anyway.
Mm.
Yeah, it's not good enough to just say, I had 10 meetings, it's who were they with, what was the engagement rate, what's the next step? So, and you need to know where your pipe is in the funnel.
Yeah.
So, literally, get your CEO and your CTO and your CF, particularly the finance guy on board with that this is important, that we all use this.
Yeah. And how have you become comfortable with that? Because if we think back, I remember when I first started in marketing, it was what I call quite fluffy. We had the vanity metrics, and it was especially because I started my career in PR and events, and it was all about the reach and how many people we got that opportunity to see. I always loved that measure, opportunity to see. Wasn't guaranteed to see, but there was an opportunity.
So, you know, they might have, if you're very lucky, they might have read this.
Yeah, they might have spent a second on that, but that was it. That, you know, they went in that deck. And over the years, I kind of just got so frustrated with it that, you know, we built an entire model around performance marketing and bridging the gap between sales and marketing. But that is genuinely very rare in in-house teams.
Yes.
What happened in that journey? How did you become comfortable with it? And how else could others start to implement that themselves?
I think I was really lucky. I worked for a VC called Notion Capital. And they really believe that marketing is a board-level function. So I think it's a mindset thing. You suddenly change the way you think of yourself. So if you think of yourself as a marketing director who's delivering things like content and leads, you start thinking yourself as a financially responsible individual on that board that's got to bring money in. Mm. And your leads are the first start of that journey. Mm. So if you can have that mindset and go in there and think, this, I'm giving the tools to sales, they should use them. But in order to be the right tools, I've got to work with them and get on really well with the sales director. You know, it's a relationship. But it's different to when I first started. It's not a, when I went to LexisNexis, it would be, we need a new brochure. We need a website. We need a landing page. Are you running a webinar on this? And are we going to this event? It's now, it has to be a collaborative event thing. And I think the world is more collaborative anyway.
Sure.
And don't, one thing I would say to any marketers out there, don't be afraid to put a meeting in the diary that you've instigated. Mm. Don't wait for someone else to do it.
Yeah, it genuinely starts to lead. I mean, I think people, in a changing culture, when you're changing from fluffy marketing to performance marketing, it definitely takes time, but it also comes with a lot of fear.
Yeah.
And I think building that safe space in those meetings. So even if your MQL, your lead, gets rejected, that's fine. The fact you've got the lead and you're learning from it is massive. And that you're, if you're learning from it week in, week out, oh, actually that timing or that particular header or that particular search term or that ad isn't working because it's not filtering out, or the value isn't high enough, or it's of the wrong country, all of these things, all of that is so valuable. But I think a lot of people become quite sensitive to it and see it as a failure. And I think the safe space in which people create to do that, it, as you say, everyone has to really be involved and and signed up to it. But that does really genuinely need to come from the top.
Talking about safe spaces, I think one of the good workshops that I did, and I can't remember the guy's name, I've done it with three different facilitators, is a safe. So you've got your C-suite or your management suite is to run a day safe. It's a safe space, so you all understand who you are and where you are and where you fit in the business.
Yeah.
And that really works. There's quite a few. There's some really good ones out there. It changes everyone's mindset. So, you know, I talked about ChatGPT.
Mm.
So from 10 years to now, I think it's quite important that I mentor quite a few people who are younger than me, and they're moaning already about, you know, things that they haven't explored. They're blocking their heads from things that are new. I was on a panel recently for Hot Topics, and everyone was moaning about ChatGPT, and I asked the question, who'd used it? And everyone had only used it once.
On a final question then, let's just look at around the challenges that we're facing and that you're seeing, and how that will help like future marketers.
So I think everybody has budget constraints. They're bigger than they've ever been. So I think future marketeers, open your eyes, find the tools that are there for you. Focus on time management. I'm a great believer in ChatGPT. I use it a lot. I use Grammarly. I use Yoast. There are lots of tools that can make you not more productive, but your what you produce will be excellent, so, and quicker, because we haven't got the teams we've got. So embrace all those different things and find a core team that you work with. Trust your design team, trust your PR team. If you've got good suppliers, then you can deliver really good marketing campaigns.
Thank you for listening to our Marketing Insights podcast by Drew and Rose. And thank you to the wonderful Louise Robertson, who's been sharing her amazing experience.